Okay, so now we know what lake trout is, and we know what lake trout isn't. But why is it called lake trout?
Honestly, that's unclear.
Okay, really?
Well, there's a theory.
All right, let's hear it. This is Roughly Speaking, Newsroom Edition, the flagship podcast of the Baltimore Sun, featuring stories from our city and our state that you can't get anywhere else. I'm Pamela Wood. Thank you for joining us. This week, you're the producer, as we tell four stories inspired by your curiosity. Questions from Baltimore Sun readers take us underground, underwater, to the back of the restaurant, and back in time. These stories come from a project the Sun's been doing for a few months now called You Ask, We Answer. Like a lot of interesting journalism, it starts with an open-ended question. We've asked our readers, and now you, our listeners, a simple question. What do you wonder about the Baltimore area that you'd like us to investigate? We have received hundreds of questions, wondering about water bills, traffic lights, litter, construction projects, ancient burial grounds, urban legends, and natural wonders. Some questions were a little more personal than others. One reader sought out a tailor to alter a wedding outfit, and another person asked us to book an MVA appointment on their behalf. If there's something you're wondering about the Baltimore area's people, places, or culture, you can ask it right now at baltimoresun.com/ask. In this episode, we share what we discovered from four of the questions that we've answered so far. They all concern places or things that Baltimoreans know well, but I guarantee you, reveal details you didn't know or never even thought about before. It's kind of like discovering a trapdoor in your living room that you never knew was there. With me in the Baltimore Sun Sound Studio is reporter Colin Campbell, who wrote the most recent story in our You Ask, We Answer series. Colin, welcome to Roughly Speaking.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Colin, Andy from South Baltimore had a question that took you to one of Baltimore's most recognizable landmarks, Federal Hill. This is a park with a commanding view of the Inner Harbor and the downtown skyline. Locals take their dogs there, take their kids to the playground. Tourists are always taking selfies there. Couples get engaged there. And I know every time I'm there, I always see somebody doing a photo shoot. But Andy suggested that while everyone's peering over the edge, there might be something hidden lurking beneath our feet. What is that?
Secret tunnels.
Secret tunnels?
Yeah, secret tunnels. So while Federal Hill does have a commanding view, as you said, of downtown and the Inner Harbor, it has long suffered these landslides and cave-ins that have led folks in the neighborhood to wonder and to theorize about underground tunnels. It turns out that there are a number of tunnels that were dug into the hill for various reasons more than 100 years ago before it became a park in 1880. The reader asked what the uses for these tunnels were, and so we looked into them and did some document diving, did a bunch of interviews, talked to folks who live in the neighborhood as well as a handful of historians and even an archaeologist who ventured into them.
So what'd you find out?
Well, the hill actually served as a repository of sand, clay, silica, and iron ore, and there were mine shafts dug into the hill in order to harvest those products before it became a park.
And now also, given its location and its elevation up above the harbor, Federal Hill was an important military asset. It was used for defense of Baltimore during the War of 1812, and later Union soldiers occupied it during the Civil War. Now, it seems like tunnels could be useful for soldiers. Did they ever use those tunnels?
So it's not clear whether they actually dug any of the tunnels. There was one that was long rumored to be going all the way from Federal Hill to Camden Station, which would have been quite an undertaking, especially to do in secret, and that's never been verified. But we did speak to one neighbor who was a former city planner and lives next to an empty lot where he says two houses next door to his collapsed into a tunnel that he is convinced had a military use because it went south from the hill toward Digital Harbor High School, which in the 1800s, 1880s would have been farmland at that point. There wasn't really the Federal Hill as we know it in terms of a big neighborhood. So he's convinced that they at least dug one escape route that he claims his house is leaning and that the other two houses fell into it.
Interesting. So these tunnels underneath the hill used for mining, maybe military. Are there any other, say, adaptive reuses?
There was one that we found. There was a brewery nearby that apparently discovered the tunnels already there, or perhaps the mine shafts, and saw an opportunity for some storage there. They used one of the shafts to bury kegs of beer that were later discovered in 1885 by a pair of boys who were down there looking around before the tunnels were all sealed off by the city. And they found the beer, and it turned out that it was still quite good because they drank it.
Ain't the beer cold. So what about the second part of Andy's question? Can anyone like go in and see the tunnels like without getting arrested?
Well, the city has, first of all, many of them have collapsed and caved in, and every time they do, the city fills them in and makes it all nice again for the park. There are entrances we know of, but they have all been sealed by the city.
I know. What's the concern lately with the presence of tunnels? There's some discussion about doing a staircase on the hill.
There was a proposal that came before the city to place steps on the eastern slope, the one facing the American Visionary Art Museum, but actually the director and founder of the museum testified in a recent hearing saying that she really would encourage them, A, not to do it, and B, if they do place stairs there, to do ground-penetrating radar because she's sure that a tunnel still exists on that side of the hill.
Yeah, seems like that's possible. That sounds like that was a fun and interesting story to check out, Colin. The next question takes us just down from Federal Hill to the Inner Harbor. Daniel from West Baltimore wanted to know what was underneath the surface of the water. Many Baltimoreans' knee-jerk response to this would probably be, nothing living.
To the contrary, my colleague on the Emerging News Desk, Lillian Reed, who reported the story, found that there's all kinds of living things down there. Lots of fish, lots of crabs, the occasional jellyfish, and rockfish.
Now, there's wildlife under there, but that's not to say the harbor is perfectly safe. There's also some nasty stuff in the water.
A whole section of her story was called Pollution and Contaminants.
Yikes.
In addition to mattresses, clothing, street signs, plastic margarita cups, and stuff like that, one scientist told her that there's all kinds of pollution down there. He said, "I'd never touch the harbor water without gloves and hand sanitizer." And in 2018, which was Maryland's wettest year on record, millions of gallons of sewage-tainted stormwater overflowed from Baltimore's sewer system into the tributaries and the harbor. It has three trash wheels to capture some of the floating pollution, but I'm not swimming in there anytime soon.
And one of Lillian's sources for this story was a police officer who oversees the Baltimore Police Department's dive team. Now, it's his job to know exactly what's down there so they can safely recover evidence and sometimes the occasional electric scooter. So there's no sunken treasure down there, but police have found some interesting things.
Yeah, there have been some interesting discoveries. Cannonballs have been found off Fort McHenry. Understandably, there was a sunken Cadillac found near Canton Waterfront Park off of Clinton Street. A couple of sunken boats were found at one point near Fells Point off of Boston Street, and all other manner of small, not necessarily prize-worthy or treasure-worthy discoveries, but interesting stuff nonetheless.
All right, so next we travel from the harbor to the lake. Well, not really the lake. Filleted, breaded, and deep-fried lake trout is a Baltimore carryout staple. Yet lake trout is neither from a lake nor is it actually trout. There are, in fact, no natural lakes in Maryland. This question, which came from Elizabeth in North Baltimore, practically asks itself, Colin, what is the deal with lake trout?
Well, our dining reporter Christina Tassick looked into this one, visiting Lake Restaurant in Northwest Baltimore and talking with food historians. It's actually whiting, not lake trout, from the cold waters off the northeast coast of the U.S., and it's a more economical choice than the other Baltimore favorite, crabs. Usually it's a couple of dollars for a passel of lake trout fried crunchy, crispy, and if you like it, doused with hot sauce.
Okay, so now we know what lake trout is, and we know what lake trout isn't. but why is it called Lake Trout?
Honestly, that's unclear.
Okay, really?
Well, there's a theory.
All right, let's hear it.
Bill Devine of Fadley's Seafood at Lexington Market thinks it's a bastardization of late trout, L-A-T as in Thomas, E. Decades ago, when the fish would arrive late in the season, it was referred to as late trout. So being that Baltimoreans, as he said, couldn't speak the king's English, it got corrupted to lake, L-A-K-E, trout.
All right, not the first time that the way we talk has gotten us into trouble in Baltimore.
The way he put it was, it's a colloquialism, hon.
Okay, before we go, another name game. Quite a few people have asked us why different Baltimore neighborhoods are called what they're called. We'll share what reporter Phil Davis learned about two of them. First up is one of Baltimore's most integrated neighborhoods that's gone through a few different names over the years.
That's right. Pigtown, near Baltimore's stadiums, started off as Cattle Quarter. Both monikers came from the neighborhood's proximity to slaughterhouses, as animals would be herded through the neighborhood's streets. Before refrigeration, many kitchens used to be set up in the basement, so residents would allegedly try to steal a meal through street-level windows. Anyway, sometime in the early 1900s, swines became the dominant livestock in the area, so its name changed as well.
Okay, so first it was Cattle Quarter, which I didn't know. Then it was Pigtown, which I did know. And then the third name is not really caught on completely. Washington Village.
Yeah, in the late 1970s, as the area was seeing new development, some neighborhood activists wanted to rebrand it to something with a less violent connotation than slaughterhouses. Washington Village references the neighborhood's main street, Washington Boulevard. But it hasn't really stuck. Now the name elicits eye rolls and shrugs from residents. And the neighborhood raises pigs at its annual festival and features them on bumper stickers and murals.
Okay, so moving up to West Baltimore. Sandtown Winchester became nationally known 4 years ago as the childhood home of Freddie Gray. But it's also emblematic of Baltimore's structural racism and housing discrimination that's led to segregation within our city. But Sandtown Winchester also has a rich heritage.
In addition to being the home of former Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall and jazz musician Billie Holiday, the area gained a reputation in the early 1900s as one of the city's premier working-class neighborhoods, with companies like Schmidt Baking Company and Lafayette Market serving as major employers. According to the group Men of Sandtown, the neighborhood got its name from the sand that fell out of the bricks of horse-drawn carriages and trucks going to and from the sand and gravel quarry located on Monroe, Lawrence, and Prestonman Streets.
So it's a Sandtown part of the name. Where's the Winchester part come from?
Well, according to the Director of Preservation and Outreach at Baltimore Heritage, the earliest reference was about in a 1976 Baltimore Sun article about the Sandtown Winchester Community Corrections Steering Committee. The article claims the group is known by two old names of the neighborhoods in the area, meaning that Winchester was likely its own neighborhood before merging with Sandtown. It's almost certain that the neighborhood name is based on Winchester Street, which was opened in 1867.
Wow, well, this is all really fascinating stuff, Colin. I feel like I have loads of trivia that I can drop at parties the rest of the summer. So to my friends and family, I apologize if I am insufferable. All right, so what questions are we tackling next?
Well, I'm actually going to be working on one soon about how the lights in Baltimore City are synced. It's a classic complaint of commuters constantly looking down a street and seeing red light, green light, and wondering why they're not all either red or all green. So we're going to be going into the city transportation department and talking to them about what exactly they do to time them, how difficult it is to synchronize a whole city's worth of lights. And so that's my next one. I also know that my colleague McKenna Oxenden is actually going to be going up inside the William Donald Schaefer Tower, one of the more unique looking skyscrapers in Baltimore. It's the one with the sort of little spire looking thing at the top. And a reader asked, what's in that thing? Are there offices? Are there apartments? So she's going to go to the top and report from up there on what's there.
Wow, I'm looking forward to those. And one more time, where can listeners find these stories and where can they ask their own questions?
BaltimoreSun.com/ask.
All right. And Colin, how can readers find your work and follow you?
Well, I'm on Twitter. If you want to go there, it's CMCampbell6. is my Twitter handle, and also BaltimoreSun.com.
All right. Well, Colin, thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
And that's Newsroom Edition for this week. Thank you for joining us. For more audio from the Baltimore Sun, head on over to BaltimoreSun.com/roughlyspeaking, and be sure to check us out every Friday. And while times may change, the need for quality journalism doesn't. So please consider subscribing to the Baltimore Sun at BaltimoreSun.com/subscribe. For producers Hallie Miller and Steve Early, thanks again, and we'll see you back here next time.